Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Here in the heart of Healdsburg, in the beautiful restaurant Valette, sitting down with Dustin Valette, who started this local legend. If you haven't been, you must come immediately. It is so delicious that I can't seem to stay away, and I finally am getting to sit down with one of my favorite culinary men. I'm going to ask him every burning question I can think of, and we can start in the very beginning. For those of you that have not yet heard of Valette, tell us, how did the all get started?
Well, first off, thank you very much and welcome to our restaurant. Valette, the restaurant, started about 4.5 years ago from conception. My brother and I are both in the restaurant business. So I started cooking about 25 years ago now. Aaron started about 27 years ago.
You don't look old enough.
It's the beard. You guys can't tell us right on the radio. The beard, it takes off like a good 12, 18 years.
Wow.
So my brother's always been front of the house. I've always backed the house. And you know, every family gathering, we always got together. We always said, you know, one day we're gonna open a restaurant back in our hometown of Healdsburg. So I traveled in Europe, in New York, in Hawaii. Aaron did the same thing. He traveled a lot to Asia. He went to San Francisco. And we met back here about 6 years ago. We both came back from Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. I was the executive chef of Dry Creek Kitchen, Charlie Palmer's restaurant. And he was the assistant general manager at Francis Ford Coppola's restaurant up in Geyserville.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this crazy idea, having too much wine to drink one day. And we said, no, let's get back. Let's go buy our great-grandfather. So our great-grandfather used to own this building back in the 40s, and it used to be a bakery. So we're going to, you know, go buy Pepe's old bake shop, and let's turn it back into a restaurant. Let's do something that, you know, that we always talk about. Let's do it in our hometown. Let's make it authentic and real. And, you know, let's showcase the heritage, showcase what Sonoma County is, and showcase just the artisans we have working with us and the artisans that produce the amazing products in Sonoma County.
Healdsburg is such a hotbed of fine dining these days, and dining period, there's such an amazing array of great restaurants. So how do you stand out? How do you make it so relevant and wonderful that people really flock here? Because I know you're really busy, so I'm dying to find out why.
We have a really tall ladder I stand on. It gets me like 5 feet above everyone else. We're great. What we do is, honestly, we're very fortunate to work with amazing quality products, amazing vendors. My job and part of the franchise is just not to screw up the products. It's, if you talk to any great winemaker, you talk to William Sellum, you talk to, you know, Costa Brown, you talk to Amy's great, Bob Cabral. I mean, Amy's amazing winemakers, and they say you start off with best quality fruit, and your job is to let the fermentation happen. Let it evolve naturally. Don't try to, you know, add all these crazy chemicals, do this fancy technique. Just start off with the best quality grapes possible. Do the minimal interaction. Really showcase the wine itself. And here at the restaurant, we try the same thing. Really sit back and say, let's get the best quality ingredients. Let's showcase cool technique. But let's not try to add a bunch of stuff, not a bunch of sauces, add a bunch of spices. Keep it simple, keep it clean, keep it authentic, keep it real. Showcase that, you know, people, diners now, they want to know where the food's from. They want to be organic, they want to be biodynamic, they want to have products that are heritage, you know, heirloom seeds, heritage chickens. We want to do things that really showcase what, you know, for lack of a funny term, but the bounty of Sonoma County. Showcase what we do best out here in Sonoma County, in Healdsburg. And that's agricultural based.
No, this is your home, isn't it? You're very, very attached to it.
Yes.
We'll flesh it out in a minute, but what is it like to have a restaurant in the community that you know so well and that knows you so well?
You know, we're very fortunate. We're, you know, walking out of work, there'll be people who pop over and be like, hey, you know, can I get a reservation for Friday? Or, you know, hey, I was in there a couple nights ago and I love the new salad, you know, or man, I had this new piece of, you know, the black cod. I heard that's from the local fisherman right here out by Mendocino. And it really intertwines you with the community. It really, you have a direct response of what people are looking for, what people want, what people's passions are, what the diner wants. And a big part of our restaurant really is the wineries. I mean, we have arguably, I don't want to say the world's, but I would probably go toe-to-toe with some of the world's best Pinots out there. Pinot in Sonoma County, Russian River, Dry Creek.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absolutely amazing. Zinfandels are fantastic. Our Chardonnays are amazing. Our, you know, our cabs out there by Knights Valley in between here and Napa are starting to come up. We're starting to get pretty close. So a big part of our food really is the wine. It really is the terroir. If you look at any great winery, they really say, you know, so much of the grape is the terroir, where it's grown. And if you sit back and look at our soil, our climate, we have, I think, 37 microclimates in Sonoma County. It is amazing, the diversity. And farmers out here do the same thing as the grape growers. Farmers out here have a passion. Our peach lady, the person we buy our peaches from, she goes out there and she cuts off 90% of the peaches off the tree just to showcase the best peaches, to really intensify the flavor of the best peaches. My job is to find the best purveyors, best vendors, the most passionate artisans, and work with them. From the cook to the grape grower to the vegetable grower, it really is the quality of the product, and it's nuances, things. It's making sure that when you're buying a tomato, they're not overwatering it. You're making sure that they're, you know, cutting off green tomatoes to intensify the tomatoes themselves. We have a person that grows us tomatoes just for our restaurant. That's all she does, and it's we're so fortunate to have that.
You seem so driven by the producers, by people that get the hands dirty and make things happen. And you basically frame it.
That's exactly what we do. You know, our job really is to showcase the craft, to showcase the artisans we get to work with, showcase people who have passion. I have a passion for cooking. I have a passion for hosting people at our restaurant. I have a passion for having people come together around a table and break bread together. But it doesn't mean that I go buy my products from, you know, China or, you know, some frozen crap from 1,000 miles away. It's really sitting and saying, let's find a person with equal passion for figs, right? Let's find a person with equal passion for peaches. Find a person with equal passion for uni. And, you know, work with a guy who goes out there and harvests uni every day, 7 days a week, and brings us uni 7 days a week. It's finding that group of people, finding people with the same desire, not be good, but try to be the best of what you are. Be that a grape grower or a fisherman, a fish monster. It's finding the best and showcasing them.
That sounds like a recipe for success.
So far it's worked.
It's definitely a teachable moment. So what's the hardest things about restaurant business in your restaurant?
You know, I think the hardest part about the restaurant industry is the costs going up. And that's probably the hardest thing we face right now is the reality of business. You know, we're in an environment now where some businesses out there make 15-20% profit. You know, we're fortunate if we're making a little bit of profit, we're happy. And I think the hard part is trying to have people understand that if you're basically just off price, if you go to the store and you're buying the cheapest pack of printer paper, it's different than buying the best quality product. And our restaurant, I think, is very affordable. We're a very affordable restaurant, but our quality products we use, our vendors we use, are of the utmost, the highest quality we can possibly find. And that's always the hardest part we have in the restaurant business, is trying to justify, trying to quantify, and saying, you know, the prices we pay for our tomatoes are more than you buy from Safeway or Costco. You pay probably 50 times more than you buy from generic tomato, but there's a person who grew that from seed. There's a person out there who's cutting back the leaves of the tomato plant. There's a person who decided, instead of putting grapevines in this beautiful soil, that they're actually using the tomato seeds, and they're using the tomato paste. That is what their passion is. So I think for us to be able to buy that tomato is essential to our business. And I think the hardest part is having people understand that a quality product means paying the farmer a good rate. It means paying the person who's working the tomato plants a good rate. It means paying the landlord who actually owns the land, because most of our farmers aren't all able to own their own land, so they actually lease the land. It's really having that education, that teachable moment of saying, we want to support ecosystem we have. We want to support people who are passionate. We want to support people who are driven. We want to support the artisans. We're sitting here talking right now on a wooden table, and this table was made by a gentleman named Andrew Sumway. Andrew Sumway is an artisan. He does really high-end guitar, bodies maybe? Guitar for guitars. Very, very high-end. And he does amazing, amazing work. Well, we found him and we said, you know what, can you make us tables? So we found this wood. This wood is actually a 25-year-old redwood tree. Sorry, it was dead for 25 years. It's around 600 years old.
And
thank you. And it sat about 25 years out in the hills. And we found a person to reclaim it, find this old redwood. He sawed it. He brought it to Andrew. And Andrew made the tables. And we probably paid, I don't know, 20 times more for this table than if you go down to a restaurant supply store. But this goes back to a craftsman. This goes back to an artist. This goes back to keeping that story alive, keeping that circle tight, and saying we're not going to go cut down a piece of new wood and grind it up and make particle board tables. We're going to find a piece of fallen wood that is garbage, just rotten, that isn't causing harm to the environment. It's just decomposing. And we're going to take that, and we're actually going to use that into a paper and make that into something that's going to be a lot better. And something that's going to be more unique for our restaurant, something that has lineage to it, something that has a piece of history to it. So that's where we're excited, and that's where our passion is telling that story authentically.
That's fabulous. So what I just heard you say over and over again, value added, everything that the consumer will participate in when they walk in the door, you know, they talk about farm to fork, they talk about sustainability, those became, unfortunately, marketing terms in a lot of cases. In your case, it's very, very real.
Absolutely.
Where you sit down and everything you consume has integrity.
Exactly. Everything has a story. I mean, we talk about it, not really. We make our own charcuterie. You know, we're a USDA
inspector. You can see it above your head.
Yes. We're a USDA inspector facility. I'm a USDA inspector. And we make our own charcuterie because, to me, there's history to that. There's lineage to that. There's the ability to say, you know, this was a farm-raised animal from Sonoma County that we're going to cure with just salt, that's it. And we're going to process it, and we're going to preserve it. We're going to do this in a method, not the new method, not the current style of charcuterie with nitrates and fermentation, but we're using the old traditional methods, the 300, 400-year-old methods of burying it in salt, using a very low humidity box to air dry it, to bring the water activity to it, to really say, this is our history, this is our culture, this is the authenticity of Sonoma County. This is where, you know, it's easily duplicated, but it can't be reproduced the same depth in an urban setting, in a city setting. This mm-hmm. is truly authentic.
Absolutely. You're surrounded by it and you thrive on it. But I want to know, where did those values come from?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, so much of what I do goes back to my childhood. When I was a kid, both my parents worked all the time. My mom flew Reach, the medical air ambulance, helicopter and fixed wing. So they'd pick up people like an ambulance, but in the air. So they'd pick people up and they'd fly them to New York, Texas, more specialty centers. My dad, still at 77, still flies air tankers for the Department of Forestry, dropping the retardant on fires out here. And both my parents always worked. But no matter what, we'd have dinner together. No matter what, if it was 9 o'clock at night, 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock at night, we would always have dinner together around the table. And that's something that I miss from my childhood. That's something that I wish to reproduce, to replicate some facet. So when I was very fortunate to be able to start at a young age cooking at 13, it brought me joy. It brought me this moment of, you know, sitting around a table and breaking bread together. And when you have dinner, you're forced to communicate with the person you're with. You're forced to have a good time. It's a glass of wine, a sparkling water, a grape juice, whatever it is, you're forced to interact with the person you're with. And I want to do something in my life that brought people together, especially in this kind of political day and age where everyone's, you know, war of words and fighting each other. It's us versus them.
Oh, yes.
I am so very fortunate to be able to be in an industry that isn't us versus them. It's bringing people together. It's bringing them joy. Come to our restaurant for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, however long dinner is, you don't think about the woes, the reality. You don't think about the fact that all the bad things go on in the world. Instead, you're surrounded by joy. You're surrounded by people helping you. You're surrounded by great wines, great food. You're surrounded by people that care, people with passion. You're literally coming together over food. And to me, I am utterly blessed. Size amazing family, and you said, I'm very fortunate to drive a business, but I'm blessed in my life to be able to do something that brings people together and gives them a temporary relief of reality for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
God knows we can all use it in more than 2 hours.
I agree.
I want to touch upon, as something that you briefly brought up. Obviously, a lot of your values come from the family origins, and your dad is a local hero. And
I'll
switch gears for a moment and talk about a very dark page in Sonoma County's history, which is fires, and how instrumental your father was, and you were, conversely, in helping the community. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, fire's always been a big part of my life. And I started helping my dad when I was, I think, 7, 8 years old down to the airport. Used to help him, you know, wash off the tankers, mold retardant, because it's corrosive back in the day. And then when I got to, you know, 10 or 12, it was helping put gas in the big tankers and help do all the, you know, bits of body work as a kid. Go down and help out your dad at work. And it was always a reality of what my father did. You know, it was a reality of what my mom did. My parents helped out the community. My parents were part of the solution, not part of the problem. And it's always been ingrained in me. If you're driving down the road and you see a car pulled over, I pull over to see how I can help. You know, is it a flat tire? Is it they can't get their car started? My dad's a public servant. He's a firefighter. And it rubbed off on me. 2017, we had some horrific fires up here. And when those happened, the first thing that I did was I snapped back to what I knew as a kid. I snapped back to, how do you help? How are you part of the solution? And what we did was, my dad was very, very busy. Local firefighters were very, very busy protecting lives, protecting homes. My job was to cook for these people that didn't have a hot meal. A lot of these large fire departments have all their firefighters trained because they work 24-hour shifts. So have their firefighters trained to actually cook a meal. So they're basically self-sufficient. And the thing is that the person who's cooking is a trained firefighter. A person who's cooking, really, his job is to fight fires. His job is to protect people. His job or her job is to take people out of homes, to keep people alive. And I felt like, you know, for me, I'm not a trained firefighter. All I do is cause more harm by doing that. So I went and I went to all the local fire departments, Cal Fire, CDF, and the air attack up here in Hillsburg, and our local fire departments. And I said, guys, get your trained firefighter out of the kitchen, get him on the front lines. I'll bring you your lunch, I'll bring you your dinner, we'll take care of that. We're a bona fide restaurant, so from a legal standpoint, we're able to actually bring them food, which is a technicality that a home cook couldn't do.
Wow.
And we did about 400 to 500 meals a day. And it was from the hell attack to the CDF, Department of Forestry, Cal Fire, to local fire divisions, along with police departments here in the surrounding areas of Sonoma County. And it was saying, get the professional out there doing their job. Let me do the cooking. That's what I do for a living, and that's how we helped out. We did a lot of meals, and we were very, very fortunate to help out in the morale of the firefighters and the first responders, but also we were able to get them out of their kitchens, right? And it was kind of funny. I mean, the first couple of days, you know, we closed the restaurant, and we just cooked what we had in the walk-in. And we did, you know, Kobe steaks, lobsters, there was anything you had. And it was funny, when we first showed up the first couple of days, these firefighters were eating, you know, caviar and lobster and Kobe steak. And it wasn't a bad meal for them.
No, I remember it was quite a dark time, and the morale was probably as important as anything else, and maybe even more so, because nobody really knew how long it was going to take, and nobody really understood just the scope and the drama of it fully, but everyone was affected by it. And the fact that you not only offered a helping hand, but you were so present for your community, I think is invaluable. And I think, you know, anybody who has been in this situation when there's chaos and so much tragedy, a positive word, a hot meal, means absolutely everything.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And that's something that we realized when we were up there. First day we went to the Hillsburg Airport here, got closed down. They used that as a hell attack base. And usually the guys are jumping down the helicopters. And the first day we showed up, we just, you know, went through security through my dad's clearance, and we dropped off food in their mess hall, their tent, pop-up tent they had. And they knew who the hell we were, and we just dropped off food. And so they got to be back tomorrow at 3:30, same time. They had an earlier than normal dinner at 3:30. So we show up the next day at 3:30, and I pull my truck up, go through security, and so driving up, I should never forget seeing adult people just running to me. And, you know, these guys were overjoyed with emotion, saying, you know, the past 2 days we've been eating, you know, government-issued bread and government-issued peanut butter. And these are people who are risking their lives. These are people who are jumping out of helicopters. These are guys who are literally jumping out of a helicopter on a rope into a burning fire with a shovel on their back, and they're taking their lives. People died in 2017. I mean, 97 people, something like that, died. I mean, these are people that are risking their lives to help people who never met before. And to see them that overwhelmed with emotion, to see them, you know, that grateful for just bringing them hot food, it's very heartwarming. But you know, those are the heroes. It's not me. I'm just a cook. I cook food. I bring people joy. It's people like my dad. It's the first responders. Those are the ones that deserve the credit. Those are the ones that are risking their lives day in, day out.
I have to respectfully disagree for a moment, sitting here and watching your eyes change and knowing how deeply you care. I know in the industry we have a joke, you know, why in food we don't save lives. Perhaps we don't save lives directly, but people like you that give hope in the darkness and give that helping hand from the kindness of your heart, that matters, in my view, just as much. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I really disagree with you on that. I just say that.
No, but that's part of who you are. You're a humble being, and that's why I enjoy being around you. And actually, it translates into your food, that generosity of spirit, in addition to the integrity that we talked about. And speaking of generosity, I know that you've attended and cooked at many charity events, and I'm going to make you mention a handful, because I know Naples is where I had your food last in that context, but I'm sure there's many, many more. So tell us about that.
We do a lot of charity. I mean, it's our way of giving back to the community. End of the day, restaurants aren't the biggest profitable entities, and for us to pull out hard capital doesn't go quite as far as other businesses. But we can participate, we can cook, we can help facilitate, and be much more, help out a lot more these big charities. So yeah, we do stuff like Naples Food and Wine that 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I'm flying out next week to Fort Myers Food and Wine. Mm-hmm. Red, White, and Snow in, you know, in Utah. Mm-hmm. We top and bottom. At the end of the day, we try to stay focused on Swinton County as much as possible, but it's not just us who are hurt. You know, we were down there with Emeril Lagasse, you know, helping out in Louisiana. There's a lot of people out there that need, and a lot of people who I think society forgets about sometimes. And I think if everyone just did one small thing, if everybody took just a little piece of their craft and shared it, I think our world would be a much better place. And for me, I'm just fortunate that I enjoy cooking. It's what I do. It's my passion. It's my love. And to be able to share that with people who are in need and be that the element of a charity fundraiser, you know, raising funds for, you know, children's education in Napa, or, I'm sorry, Naples, or if that is, you know, just the good old-fashioned cooking somebody a meal that doesn't usually get that quality of food, it warms your soul. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
Wow. And you're so aware. It's so natural for you.
Everyone helps out, right?
Yes. So let's delve into your career.
My career, yes.
Yes, 13. That's a very early start.
I started at 12, actually, but it was at the local high school cooking. Probably not the best way to start is cooking cafeteria food.
It teaches you what not to do, right?
Exactly. Frozen pan bread pizza. When I was 13, I got an apprenticeship as a dishwasher, which it sounds funny, but I was very, very excited. I think I knocked on the door for 4 days in a row, and finally the fourth day, the guy said, well, look, you can't work for me, you're only 13. I was like, no, I'm 16. And he's like, you just told me yesterday you were 13. I'm like, well, I'll show you. I'll bring my papers back tomorrow. So he came back the next day, and I had my mom's old typewriters back in early 90s. And, you know, I have my typewriter, and I falsified some documents. He looked at me and laughed. He goes, you can't, 16
Statue
a day later.
Statue of limitations is over,
right?
This brother.
He's like, you can't be 3 years older in a day. So I was finally apprenticed as a dishwasher, which to me was kind of a funny thing. But I started dishwashing. Washing dishes, and just loved it. You know, worked up to prep guy, and, you know, doing salads and stuff. And then when I was 15, 2 years later, I went to a restaurant called Chateau Souverain, and I was an apprentice there also. I was a line cook, and I became a hot line cook, and then pastries and everything. And then graduated school a little bit early, went to CIA, New York, mm-hmm. Cornell Institute of America, uh-huh. New York, at Hyde Park. And I love school. School is amazing. It gave me a great baseline for everything from how to make a hollandaise to how to do a traditional stir fry. I mean, top to bottom. Then from there, went and just kind of opened the book and said, you know, who's the cool chefs? Who is the people out there making waves? So I worked for Thomas Keller at the French Laundry, Hushan. I worked with Wayne Hirabashi at Manage Oriental in Hawaii. Cidade, California. I was executive sous at Aqua for 3 years. From there, I went into Europe. So I went to Italy, Switzerland, France, and then got engaged, my wife, and we moved to Las Vegas and opened a restaurant in Las Vegas. I was there for a couple years, and Charlie Palmer would always go to my restaurant. He lured me back to California, so I was for Charlie Palmer for 6 years at Dry Creek Kitchen, and then 4 years ago, we opened Valet. And now it's actually official as of Tuesday. We have a new property we're working on. We just closed on a new restaurant here on the square called Matheson. So we'll have another restaurant in the works.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I am doing a little dance here because I know how hard you worked on this project.
Yes, it took
and
a while.
We need to know details because I think your determination is quite exemplary.
Thank you. I'm the luckiest person in the world. I really am. You know, our restaurant sitting in right now is my great-grandfather's second bakery in Gillsburg. He came from France. He was an immigrant, had nothing, and he created a life for our families, or brought our family here. And his second bakery was right here called Home Bakery, and that's where Valet is now. His first bakery was called the Snowflake. Don't worry, we're not going to rename it. but it was the first bakery, and it was on the Gillsburg Square, a very small place, and the building was actually for sale about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate to partner with my now partner, and we were able to buy the building and keep it back in the family, and we just got approved to do a restaurant inside there. So we're going to have his first bakery on the Hillsburg Square, and then the second bakery right here at Colette, which is one block north of the square. So the new one will be called Matheson in honor of Roderick Matheson, who was one of the founding fathers of Hillsburg. And we want to do a different style. We want to keep Colette what it is. You know, we're rich, you know, nice leather and rich walls and, you know, the earth colors. The Matheson's will look brighter, a little more eclectic. We're going to have a rooftop lounge overlooking the Hillsburg Plaza. A big downstairs restaurant, open kitchen. We'll be able to seat around the kitchen itself. So it's gonna be a fun one.
Yes, it sounds really exciting.
Thank you.
Basically, Hillsburg is already quite a destination, but it's people like you that keep elevating the existing scene.
Yeah.
That's, I think, instrumental in terms of growing. This is a small community. It's always going to be, you know, compact and such like that. But the fact that you've created so much value with Valet, your namesake restaurant, and now you're expanding and you're creating another gathering space where people can break bread and be convivial and eat and drink well.
Yeah, we're excited. I mean, we have so many great restaurants here in this town. I mean, we're sitting across from Singapore, right? Michelin 3-star, you know, top 50 in the world. We're sitting, you know, a block and a half from the former location of Doug Keene's Cyrus. He's going to redo Cyrus here, it sounds like, in about a year or two. But there are so many great restaurants. Charlie Palmer's Dry Creek Kitchen. I mean, you look at just how many outstanding restaurants there are in this, you know, this little small town of 10,000. This is a food and wine destination. You know, this really is a place that people come to experience food and wine. People come to experience the rich history, the agricultural significance of what Sonoma County is. This was founded on grapes originally. This was all vineyards, and they got pulled out and made into prunes, and now it's going back to vineyards and food. And this, to me, is the Mecca of food and wine. This, to me, is the Holy Grail. This is Graceland. You know, this is the place that we want to live the rest of our lives and showcase our passion, showcase our artisans, showcase the people we have that live and work here as part of this community, and showcase our background.
You know, it really jumps out to me, and I hope to my listeners as well, how you just mentioned some of the clearly very renowned dining spots, but the way you spoke of them is not in a competitive way in any sense. And traditionally speaking, restaurant business is a tough, competitive environment. Yet, you speak of them as neighbors, as friends.
Well, they are. I mean, that's the best part. It's, I can't tell you how many times I've borrowed stuff from Kyle, the chef Singlethread, or he's borrowed things from me. Or when they were building their restaurant, they used our kitchen to, you know, do their demo cooking in. And how many times I've gone to, you know, Scotty from Dry Creek Kitchen and said, hey, can I borrow this? Or Shane from Chalkboard, like, oh man, I'm out of parchment paper. And you share things back and forth. We're here for a common cause. This is a competition. This is us jealous of each other. This is us pushing each other. This is us trying to outcook the other guy, you know, and this is us, you know, really, it's a great rivalry, you know. I was so excited when Singlethread got their third Michelin star. I was so overjoyed because it just here's a person with pure passion. Here's a person, Kyle, that's just dedicated to do the best of the best. And to see him honored that way is, you know, I couldn't be more ecstatic for him. You know, for us to be able to all work together for a common cause, for us to all work together to be a better town, a better community, a better place for visitors to come and check out and see what we do here. A better place for people to, you know, go out to a restaurant and say, you know, if we have extra scallops, somebody runs out of scallops, like, I'm going to let them borrow our scallops, because we're all here for the same reason. It's not competition. We're pushing each other to try to be better. Healthy competition.
Well, you're a poster child for the saying that tide lifts all boats.
Absolutely. And I completely believe that. I've used that line 1,000 times. But it's 100% true. I mean, if people come in from Ohio and they, you know, come to the restaurant and they have a bad experience at one of our competing restaurants, they're not going to like Healdsburg much. If they come to a competing restaurant and they love Healdsburg, they're going to want to come back. And when they come back, they're probably not going to be here for a day. They usually stay here a day or two. And if they stay here for 2 days, you know, maybe they'll come to my restaurant. So for us, it's all synergistic. It's a great relationship we have with our quote-unquote competitors, our competing chefs. But more importantly, it pushes us to be honest. It pushes us to improve our craft. It pushes us to be more diligent on what we do. And this is a group of people who are passionate about their what they do. This isn't a competition. This is us all passionate about our industry, our food and wine.
Speaking of, I want to get into the menu writing bit. I want to get into your chefy head and find out why you make the dishes that you make. Tell me in detail.
You know, every dish has inspiration for us. You know, something. Any dish you look at, it starts with some form of inspiration. It might be something from our garden. We have a 5,000 square foot garden, 100 yards from here. And it might be something that's just like, oh man, these tomatoes are perfect. Or, you know, our baby fennel is almost ready. So it might be a catalyst for our saying, you know, how do we use our, you know, 500 heads of fennel we have? You know, or it might be a dinner. I went out to a competing restaurant, right? And I had something that I was like, wow, this is delicious. But man, I think if I did this instead, or if I substitute these ingredients, it'd be better if we did this. And really just, you know, there's always a catch, there's always a inspiration, there's always something that gets us excited about the essence of it. Our poke dish, you know, we have a poke dish here that I lived in Hawaii for a couple years, and it really started by literally going down to the fish market and getting raw ahi and mixing ahi myself, mixing the poke that I was taught, and really showcasing that this is a very simple dish, but all the components are very clean, but the components together make this amazing flavor. And our poke we have now is just a, you know, refinement of that over the past 10 years. Is, you know, every day adding this, adding that, take this away, take that away, and really trying to like do the best job we possibly can to make it the best poke you've ever had. There's always inspiration, so fascinating.
So your signature dish.
Scallops on crew. Yes, it's one of our favorite ones.
How did that come
about? Oh, that's a good one. So that actually started in Paris. It is hilarious. it was kind of funny. We actually went and we were in Paris, and my wife and I went to a small little boutique little restaurant. It was initially 2-star, but it was super small. And they made they knew we were mutual friends. And they made a scallop dish for us, and it was a raw scallop. They just simply shucked the scallop and they poured in cognac and into the dish, which was amazing. And what they did was they put they did a baguette dough around it and they baked in the oven. I thought it was the most cool thing ever, because what it did was it really showcased a raw scallop steamed in the shell. It really showcased just the essence of the scallop itself. And then what we did was we actually kind of refined that. we took that and we put it in a pot instead of the scallop shell. And we actually went and did a puff pastry top on top. And we, instead of doing a cognac, we did a vanilla inside there. And to me, it was kind of the essential dish that we came from in Paris, but it was refined. It was our signature. It was our addition that we did. And it became just this kind of cult following. Everyone in the world, you know, really said, wow, this is the best thing they ever ate. We had a Food Network come out here, and the Food Network literally did a segment on it, and it was the best thing that they ever ate. And it was just this pure essence of just scallop, raw alcohol, and butter, that literally all steam together. And instead of having that baguette dough that's hard and dense, we use a puff pastry on top. So when you break through, it's light and flaky. And then we also change by putting a little caviar per blanc inside there. So a caviar and champagne per blanc, you pour table side. And I think that's the essence of our food. I have something in the garden or another restaurant or just driving down the road and seeing mustard flowers right now. And it's my uncle's vineyard 2 days ago and we're playing with a new mustard dish because mustard's everywhere right now in Stone County. And how can we incorporate that into some of our food dishes? How can we take this seasonal product that's blooming right now and really showcase that? And that's what I guess inspiration behind our food.
Wow. Well, you certainly create some inspirational food. I saw diners' eyes roll in the back of their heads, especially. And one of those diners might be me, I'm just saying. Your food is simple, it's classic in many ways, the flavors are spot on, it's not overdone. And I think what contemporary cuisine unfortunately suffers from in many regards is that chefs try to do too much, they're too chefy. Tell us what your thoughts are about that.
Oh, I mean, every chef wants to be on the front page of every newspaper, right? It's, I mean, you think about it, it's like the news, right? The news came out there, and we watched the 7 o'clock news tonight. They said, hey, today everything's great in the world, and things are going good. We're going to be like, okay. And if you heard that repeated for 30 minutes, it'll be kind of mundane, the same thing. You know, instead, the news comes out, and they say, oh my God, there was, you know, the world's going to explode. There's a comet that's going to fly by Earth on Sunday morning. And you read a little closer and like, well, it's going to be the same distance as the moon and there's really no chance things can happen. But that front page, that first snapshot is, we're going to die on Sunday. And I think, you know, chefs, we want to have the front page. We want to be the, whoa, look what I'm doing. I'm doing, you know, chicken sashimi at Berkeley, the restaurant Berkeley did chicken sashimi, right? Raw chicken sliced. And I don't know if I really want to do that. Yeah, it's a little funky, you know, a little crazy. But, you know, they want the publicity, they want the front page, they want the shock and awe. I think, you know, my humble thing is like, well, let's not forget who we are. Let's forget what our jobs are. I'm not an entertainer, you know, I'm not a comedian. I don't have a microphone and a stage. I'm a chef, I'm a cook. I take something that we grew or someone grew for us, we cook it. We add other things to it. We add acids, we add, you know, texture to it. I'm not magicians, I'm not a freaking heart surgeon. You know, end of the day, my job is just to make flavors that taste good. You know, maybe look kind of cool on a plate. And, you know, I'm a wrangler to get people together. You know, my job is to find people who all, you know, grow his best quality products. Have John Sillers just walk by, you know, one of our best servers who's so much more knowledge than anybody out there. It's getting us all together, this crazy group all together, and really showcasing what passion is, showcasing what our industry is, our craft of cooking food. So, you know, I think that ours is just, you know, we have our own style. Our style is let the food stand for itself. Let us showcase what a great quality product can be and not add too much stuff to it.
These are all very healthy, timeless values that I truly appreciate. And that leads me to the question of what do you wish for the next generation of chefs? When I took classes at the CAA just for my personal enjoyment, I noticed that there's a lot of young people that in a seminar setting were asking questions of their potential mentors, and a lot of it had to do with, you know, how do they become famous? How do they be exactly what you described, that rock star status? And I'm afraid they might be in for a rude awakening. So what advice would you give to the young generation of chefs?
You know, I think one of the favorite things for me is, you know, if you want it, let it happen naturally. You know, if you want success, don't ask for it. I had no PR company, I had no press person, but you're interviewing me right now, right? We're talking about my philosophy. There's no press person, there's no PR company, there's no, you know, company out there drilling you 1,000 times, put dust on the radio, put dust on TV. It's not there, right? Because you don't want it. You want to showcase our craft. You want to showcase what we have. And if you're true, if you're authentic, if you're passionate about what you do, people will notice, you know? And I think the younger generation is just being bombarded with, you know, go on the network, you know, have your own show, be successful, be a TV personality. There's nothing wrong with that. But to me personally, it's just be authentic, be yourself, let your passion showcase. If you want to be on TV, go to acting school. You know, know, if you want to cook food, go to culinary school and learn how to cook. And the day I have these people that apply for us and they say, oh, you know, look, you know, I was on TV or I was featured on this magazine. And I'm like, cool, you know, cook me something. And they don't know how to cook. They don't know how to cook. They just know how to act. And that's fantastic if you're an actor. But end of day, what I do is I'm an artisan. I'm a craftsman. You know, I have a trade. I'm a tradesman. I took something that is, you know, a piece of steak, a dead cow, and we added stuff to it. We did technique to it to make that a cooked product, to make it better, make it taste better, make it edible for consumption. So again, my only suggestion I have for the young generation is be true to yourself and understand what you're getting into. This is not a celebrity chef, you know, TV thing. If you want to be a celebrity chef, you want to be a TV personality, go to acting school. That's where you start from. If you want to have a restaurant that cooks product, that feeds people, that is true and authentic, then open a restaurant. You know, do something, learn your craft, work for masters in your industry, work for people that you respect. I will never forget the first dinner I had at French Laundry. I was a kid, I was, I think 16 or something like that, right? Wow. And I remember walking in there in my jeans and a dirty shirt, no reservation. And, you know, here's Thomas Keller. They weren't as famous yet. They were just starting. And, you know, like, here he is going, all right, we'll try to figure something out. You know, we sat had dinner, my dad and I, on the way back from Sacramento. And I was just blown away by that. And that, to me, he was the first, I guess, maybe mentor of mine who said, you know, here's my craft. Here's what I do. And if you like it, great. If you don't, great. But he's a great example to me of a person who is driven, who's passionate, whose job it is to make a product better, to enhance the quality of the product by cooking, by acidification, or by technique. But that to me is a true artisan, a true craftsman.
That's really fantastic. You should run the world, by the way.
Everything
you
say
is correct. But you just, everything I'm hearing from you is so right on the spot that, it makes me think that this should be mandatory listening. Not because of my podcast, I'm just saying people need to know.
That's the beauty of it. To me, that's the beauty. It's like everyone has their own thing, you know? Everyone has their own goals, everyone has their own missions, you know? For me, I don't want to be a celebrity chef. I don't, you know? I freaking hate when people call me that, you know? I'm just some dude who learned from great people who wants to pass on to other people, wants to pass that craft on, wants to showcase that to the next generation. That's my job, you know? And I just, you know, I'm very fortunate. We have a group of people at this restaurant who are, you know, passionate. I mean, I look around at Will and Alfredo and, you know, John, who are in our restaurant right now, and Frank. These guys are, you know, these are true pillars of their industry. These are people who know the ins and outs of food. These are people who can talk to you for probably 20 hours about, you know, the difference between a poached egg and, you know, acidified poached egg and a straight heat acidification of an egg, or the difference between a hollandaise and a béarnaise. I mean, these are people who are passionate about what we do. We are artists. We're craft makers. We're in this for the right reason.
What's the most challenging thing for you to cook?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't know. I haven't found it yet. No, I mean, it depends. Like, I don't think anything's hard to cook. It's like making great wine. You know, if you start with great quality ingredient, then your job is to just not screw it up, you know? And I think the hardest thing to cook is when you get something that's subpar, something that isn't as good as it should be. You know, we're not talking about rotten. We're just talking about something that, you know, maybe the pears are a little bit too green. You know, what do you do with the pears not quite right? You know, that's probably the hardest thing to cook is get something that isn't as peak and how to showcase it to its best of your ability. That's the hardest part. And sometimes, you know, we get tomatoes that aren't quite right. You know, or we had a big frost this year, right? 2018, we had probably, maybe 200 pounds of tomatoes out there and we had a frost. So all of a sudden, our tomatoes all started dying. And we sat there and said, okay, we had probably, you know, 1,800 pounds of tomatoes that summer, but we had a couple hundred pounds out there. Should we just throw them away? I don't really like wasting food, you know? So the hardest thing I had to do was, what do I do with this product that is not as peak? So what we did was we took the tomatoes, picked them green, right? We pickled them off, and we made a pickled green tomato, not fried pickled green tomatoes, but pickled green tomato mustard, right? And we would think about it, different concept, wouldn't make sense, but until you start like playing with it, you start understanding that there's great acid, there's great tannins, there's great bitter nuances to these tomatoes. Once you pickle them and cut that back, but you gotta do something to match that. And that's where we come up with this mustard concept. We use that for our charcuterie here at the restaurant. and it's fantastic. But that's probably the hardest thing I do is you get something that isn't the best quality, not saying it's bad or off, but it's just not at its peak. How do you showcase that to make it as good as a perfect ripe tomato?
I have a million questions in my mind about repurposing food. It's a whole other podcast, but for now, I'm going to ask you about a question that I've been staring at besides your beautiful face and those wine bottles behind the bar.
Yes.
You mentioned that you're surrounded by wealth in Sonoma County. You know, I don't even think they make bad wine. I think that we're drinking so well here, it's kind of scary. How do you choose?
Oh, that's hard. That's for my brother. Aaron Garazzini is my brother and business partner. He runs the entire wine program. He has the horrible job of drinking amazing wines and getting to pick what goes on the list. We have about 120 different wines in the list right now. And the way we do it is we always go to Arista Winery, for example. And we go to Arista and we say, we want what you are most excited about. We want what you think is the best. And then we taste the top, their three top recommendations, and we pick what makes the most sense for our program here. But we always start off by saying, what are you most proud of? It's like when we go to a farmer, a new farmer comes up and they say, oh, you should buy products from us. So sure, what are you most proud of? What makes you most excited? What is your passion? What do you want? Do you want to grow onions or do you want to grow carrots? Do you want to grow melons or do you want to grow potatoes? Right? And whatever they're most passionate about is usually their best quality product. With wineries, you go to the winery, you say, what are you most passionate about? What are you most excited about? And we're very fortunate to have a great rapport with a lot of fantastic wineries. They're very hard to get. And we go to them. You know, we go to people that are, you know, 5-6 year waiting list to get their wine, Cirques. You know, like Michael Brown, Cirque, amazing wines. And when he started his winery, he said, hey, we'd love to have your wines on our list. And he jokingly said, well, there's a 5-year waiting list. And I'm like, well, it's a gosh darn good thing I asked you this 5 years ago. He looked at me and goes, I didn't even start my winery 5 years ago. I'm like, well, maybe I'm just a true person from the past. Because I remember 5 years ago saying we're on your list when it first happened. And we laughed and we chuckled and he goes, fine. He goes, what do you want me to bring? I was like, whatever you're most excited about. And we tasted a Pinot that from the Treehouse Pinot in 2013. And it was probably one of the best Pinots I've ever had. And we have that on the list right now. And we're very honored to still have that. Different vintage now. We're very honored to have that. And really say, you know, we want somebody who is passionate about what they do. Be that a server, a cook, a grape grower, a carrot grower, a farmer who farms us our heritage pigs. We want somebody who's passionate about what they do, and we want to showcase that product.
Well, there you have it. There's going to be another discussion about Matheson.
Yes,
about
absolutely.
Food sustainability, about repurposing, and more. We have to get more out of you. You haven't told us all your secrets yet. So that is to be continued. Meanwhile, my heartfelt thanks to Dustin Velez. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.